Welcome to From the Heart with me, Dawn Lister, and today's guest, the first guest of season five, who I'm super excited to talk to, Angela Carol Wallace. Welcome, Angela.
Hi, it's great to just start this fifth season. That's such a great thing to come into these dreary days and start a new season.
Oh, thank you, Angela. I'm so excited to have you as my first guest. When I was making my list of people I wanted to introduce this season, you were the top of the list. So
Really? Oh,
you
thank you.
Really were. I was kind of stalking your Instagram page forever.
Perfect.
Let me tell our listeners a little bit about you. So Angela is a Canadian land artist whose creative practice is informed by her mindfulness-based connection with her co-creator, Mother Nature. An avid wanderer and daydreaming artist, she has held many roles that contribute to her worldview and personal expression, from photographer and studio owner to an expressive arts therapist and arts-based workshop and retreat facilitator. There's a lot more to be said about Angela, and that will be in the show notes. So I'm sure you're all going to be totally fascinated, as I was, and you'll have a little listen and read in to find more information about her after our conversation. So Angela, my goodness, you've done a lot, and I know there's a lot more to you than just that tiny little bit that we've said. And firstly, before we start our conversation, you were talking to us from Canada. How are you today?
Good. It's morning here, and it's a very, I live on the West Coast, BC, and it's typically called the wet coast because it's very wet and we're in a temperate rainforest. Today is very wet and warm though. So it's, you know, I'm not complaining being inside.
Yeah, no. Yeah, when I've seen some of your work, actually, a lot of the landscape that you seem to work in reminds me a lot of Scotland because it's wet. Also, I guess I hadn't realized that Canada was so wet. It's very lush and verdant is the word I would use.
Very much, yes. Yeah, when I grew up, my dad was in the Air Force, so we sort of moved all over. But I grew up a large part in Ontario. And when we moved, which is very not as lush, it's just different landscapes. And this is very mountainous and the water, you know, the ocean. But here it reminded me, the first time I went into a park was this like vibration of Jurassic Park. It was just everything so big and everything's moss covered and every shape is, you know, mystical looking because it's not obvious. So it's a magical place, but it does remind me of Scotland in lots of ways too.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you. So let's just jump in. Firstly, I discovered Angela on Instagram, and it was her, I think it was Reels that you produced. I think you do maybe one a week. Would that be right?
Yeah, sometimes I go through, you know, just like every creative, a flurry of making some, and then I get like very full and done, and it'll be once a week or, you know, once every 2 weeks even. But yeah, I try and keep up a couple times a week to, and it does coincide with my work. In winter, I go out less. So there's less, there's when I'm documenting. So part of my work is to document my process. And, you know, when I'm in that flurry of spring and summer and even fall with all the leaves and textures, I do post a lot more. So it's very seasonally riding alongside my work.
Yeah. It sounds like the female flow, actually, you know, if we were to follow our personal flow, or, you know, like myself, menopausal now, I don't have anything going on. I follow a moon flow and it helps me burn out. That was kind of my little trick. I learned, like, if I follow that cycle, I don't just go on hot, like super speed all the time. I said, you know, it's a waning moon. I'm going to slow down. I'm going to give myself a breather. Oh, here comes the moon again. I'm going to pick up a project. And that stops me from burning out a little bit.
Right. It's just tuning into the body, right? And those cycles, that's a huge part of my work is the tuning in and that cycles and not having the rigid sort of culturalized productivity and market value that, you know, go, go, go until you're successful. Because I did do that and I did feel the consequence of that kind of work. But it's, you know, the type of my work is a lot of people will never see the pieces in person.
Yeah.
So it really is a co-creation with nature, which you can't, I can't anyway, impose this sort of foreign concrete idea of deadlines and timetables. And, you know, so it really does have to be within the body and the nature flow.
Yeah, gosh, it seems like there's so many things I want to ask you already. Let's just come back, and I'm going to ramble. Come back to, I saw you on Instagram, you have reels, and I started opening my phone on a Monday morning with the intention to look at your reel. And it was kind of like, wow, it set my tone for the week because it really calmed everything right down. It brought me into the moment. So go and have a look. If you haven't got Instagram, you can look on her website, which the stuff is on the show notes. But the reels are incredible because they follow your process of making. And sometimes you put like a soundtrack or a poem or something behind it. And it moved me to tears, the first few ones I saw. I must have shared them with 10 zillion people I know. I'm like, oh my God, you have to check this woman out. She's incredible. And they're so, the first thing I thought was, why do I not do this? Why am I not out when I'm in nature? You know, pick up something. I often pick things up, actually, weirdly. I pick things up from the woods, bring them home, and put them on my home altar or my work altar, which is always changing. And I call it an altar, but very loosely. It's kind of just like objects that speak to me. I feel I need to have therapy for a period of time. But what you do is you go into nature and you create something incredible that has a, you have a tangible feeling when you view it. I can't explain what's going on. But you are even just watching the process of you kind of considering the space, you know, because sometimes we'll see a picture of you sort of having a little think or a move around or moving things or pulling things apart. And then over the period of the reel, you'll see this beautiful, and it's not always, you know, technically beautiful. It doesn't always look, and I don't think it's meant to, is it? It's not meant to look perfect.
Well, that's again, that's our imposed idea of what beauty is, right? Acceptable. You know, so it's, I try and get out of that specifically.
Which in and of itself, just that whole process of looking at it and knowing that it's okay that it's not perfect, whatever perfect, it's going to disintegrate and it's going to change and it's not going to be seen by everybody and it might not make any money. And there's all those questions. I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, she's doing this. How does that work? Like, how is she allowed to do that? You know, does she tell people that she's doing it? Do people come and look? Does that matter? Does she care if no one sees it? There were so many questions in my mind, which I guess we can cover. But, you know, in terms of, it felt like a mindful experience and a deeply nourishing experience to view your work. And it felt like privilege, and it still is my habit on a Monday morning to check and see what you put. And if I haven't seen anything, I look back through your old ones because they can make me feel calm. So can you tell us a little bit about what land art is and how you came to be doing it?
Yeah, so start at the, so like you, I've always been drawn to nature and just, you know, picking up things. And I think it's I go walking with different people, and some people are talkers, you know, and they're sort of in that the quiet space so that they can talk. And then, which I get, and sometimes we catch up, you know, with friends and stuff, but there's a sense of me walking when I'm really connecting. And sometimes it's when I need to, and sometimes it's just when I'm open to connecting to that energy of nature that has this open invitation, but you have to have intention to do that, to that connection. And sometimes that intention can be, I'm going to pay attention, but sometimes the intention is just being able to notice what is catching your attention at all, like that stick or that leaf waving in the wind, you know, brings you into that openness, that intention of paying attention. So that has always been, since I was, my first early memories are about trees and clearings, leaves falling, and just that, that feeling of that, you know, when our earliest memories are sort of that awakening into being human, that, because before that we're kind of, I don't know, blobs in our memory anyway, but every memory that I have that is about coming into my humanness is about, is linked in nature. It just seemed to, you know, really be connecting for me. So, and throughout my life, and I've got many decades under that umbrella, but it's nature has been, and it's always been with me to go and find solace, to find, you know, personal healing, even when I was, you know, an angry teen, you know, whatever it was. As an artist, I've also gone to nature as a fascinating just observation space. And that creativity of nature, always in change, has always fascinated me. And the so that nature coming up and always being sort of a an open invitation for calm and solace, but also inspiration as an artist, incredible inspiration, just to know that things can change like that, or there's this shape, the season's changing, and bringing such spectacular moments that are gone the next day. That really informed my practice as an artist, but also as, you know, an expressive arts therapist, also just as a being. And after, or just before, I was in the city with a pretty busy practice. And I found that I was burning out, as we do when we strive. Being in the city did limit my connection with nature in the way that I felt connected. So I still had plants. I still went to the park. I still did all the things that are very beneficial for that art connection. I read, you know, lots of nature books. I led retreats into nature and nature-based, but I was still finding that, especially that alone time with nature, missing. And many other factors coming into it, I moved away from the city and my art practice took center stage as I began to do less and less therapy. COVID came in waves, disrupting everything for everybody. And one place that was not disrupted for me is to go out in nature, to actually go and create in nature. And I didn't really consider it as my art practice. It was just what I needed. And that was enough and more than enough for that healing process to begin. And I was still painting, and I was still doing a lot of collages. I was still doing lots of different arts practice that I've done before. But there came a time where it's like, this is everything that I'm looking for. This is, you know, there was no worries about the acrylic paints with the environment. There was no worries about buying more when I didn't have more. There wasn't, I didn't have the art store in the city anymore. And it's like, oh, what am I going to do, you know, with the supplies? And just that consumer part of it began to push against that, you know, open invitation of nature. So I've always followed, I think you mentioned Andy Goldsworthy is a really well-known artist, and he works very similar how I've always worked. I mean, I work like him, obviously, which is very site specific, very with very little tools. I don't bring plastics or metals or adhesives with me. I never leave anything that is not natural in the forest or in on the beach. It's always working with what is there. So that really, you know, resonated with me, that way of working. But there's this long history of land art in civilization, like cave paintings, for ritual directions, information. In North America, there's trail trees where indigenous peoples for many, many centuries, millennia before, up until like maybe even 100 years ago, but they would bend saplings on trails for direction. And this would be a process that would take decades to become the directional bent tree. So they would bend, such a slow process, and such a process linked to the next generation, to the next generation, not that immediate creation system. So there's been a lot of historical art making, ritual making, information making with nature through every culture. And in the 60s, it became more of an art movement because there was, with this social unrest throughout the world in the 60s, that market, gallery, museum hierarchy, and it was very rigid about what an artist was, and this is the definition. And so there was a push against that, and there were a group of, a diverse amount of peoples that became centered in their work on land and that impermanence, or that reflection of nature's forms and textures. So that's where it sort of took really grounding into the art movements, was in the 1960s with Niels Udo, who's still around. Robert Smithson is super famous. His jetty, a spiral jetty in the States out into the water, was huge, and that changing over the world. So that's where the land art came from, and how I came into it was, like many, I was always connected with nature and always connected with my creative part of myself, always creating. And then hit with lots of things falling apart, myself included, my mental health and even physical health, but then COVID coming in, and I just went into nature and it just clicked into place that this is all that I have been doing. And now I can do it full time in this way that is mindful, that is connected and listening to nature. That's co-creating, is not just using nature. And those things, the creativity for healing, and just, you know, being myself, and the listening to nature. There's so many different parts of being mindful and creative and in nature that are both healing and nourishing to go further, to go deeper, to go more. So it's energizing in a way that doesn't spur me to do more. You know, it's just being more without having to get to a final product. It's the process. So I don't know if that it's a long-winded way of how I came to land art, what land art is. But it's different for a lot of people, and there's many different land artists who have different takes on it and different practices.
Well, that's fascinating. I kind of want to rewind and listen to it all again and take notes. The first thing, I mean, there's so many things I want to ask you now. The first thing that comes to mind is, I wanted to get your view on this, is we all have a desire to express ourselves. And I guess it's important to be able to express ourselves and for that to be seen and viewed and stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess that's kind of one of our earliest forms of communication. Yes, would that be correct? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Some description. Maybe before I don't know. I mean, I'm guessing here. Before there was language, perhaps Marx.
I would imagine, because it's like movement is an art, right? Like move, to dance, music, sound making is before music. So, and there's communication, but also how do you connect with others? Is, you know, facial expressions and sound and movement, even if it's, you don't call it a dance, if you watch two people speak to each other who haven't seen each other for a while, there's a dance of communication, right? Even in that. So it is about being seen, but it's also about creating that moment.
Yeah.
And it has to, even people who say they're not creative, they are creating their style for the day, or they're creating how they hold themselves. They're creating sounds. They're, you know, it's always a creation of choice to be human.
Yeah. We're creating everything in every moment.
All the time.
All the time. And I wonder that with this desire, I mean, a lot of people say, oh, I'm not artistic. I can't do it. I won't, you know. It's either in you or it's not in you. I really don't agree with that. But what I'm curious about is like that desire that there is in some people, as there is in you, is to go into the woods, for instance, an object that you're going to leave there to be. There's lots of layers to that, because on the one hand, there's the acts of intentionality where you make the decision, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to see what happens and I'm going to do some kind of process. And then there's the point where you leave it and you step away from it and you either choose to document it or not, and then maybe put on social media or record it in some way or some other way, or just leave it, or maybe even you take it down. I don't know. And I'm curious about what's going on there, or like what's happening? What's the process?
For me, it's all of that. Okay. So when I would go into nature before, calling myself a land artist or having that as my focus of creative expression, a lot of times I would not take a picture or I wouldn't document the process. It would just be for, you know, in a way, a meditation or it just a creative practice that was for me. And then, you know, weirdly enough, and I don't think it's out, you know, out of the ordinary, is that then I would go and create in my studio. I feel better because I went out and did something, and that would be my prep or, you know, that igniting of a lot of permission to, because nature and working with nature materials never gives you exactly what you think. It's not like this brush with this paint and that canvas will create this effect. It's like, okay, this stick didn't bend today because blah, 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 or that there were no willows. I wanted to make a willow sculpture early on. And it's like, there's no willows here. And I really wanted to make a willow sculpture. So, you know, that sort of led me more and more to embrace that idea of work with what is and honor that rather than use that, you know, so honoring what is there. And then going to the point of deciding that I would work site specifically without a lot of tools, because I had my catalog of tools I wanted, and then started, you know, going in with intention of scouting places out and thinking of how that sound, or how even just how would I get power if I wanted, you know, power tools. I did have an idea of power tools at one point for different projects, and it's so antithetical to what I was experiencing. And then that was like, okay, so work with what's here. And that includes a huge amount of frustration, which is part of the process, not that I'm doing something wrong. And that was a big realization for me, is that it is part of the process to get frustrated, you know, not my frustration, but the process of not being able to use those branches today, or this tree is like saying, no, you are not sticking anything to me. You know, that the deer pooping around my area where I was sitting the day before is like, ugh! You know, but it's that haphazard kind of chaotic bliss, you know, of nature. So letting go became a huge part of my, not just my art, but my practice. And then coming to the point of, my background first was photography, is documentation was a way that I could integrate and sit with the process and also the finished pieces. And also I've documented their impermanence into decay. I'm due to go back to one of the big projects, which is, it's on an island closest to my house, but I have to go to two ferries to get there, so I don't go there every day. And it's a pretty remote area, but a lot of the pieces have decayed in such magical ways. And you would say if somebody came upon it, they may not even notice it was there. And some you can see the decay in increments. But that is part of that process of letting go and appreciating each stage, or again, that beauty That is not the definition of a magazine beauty, or, you know, that rigid idea of what process, art, and beauty are. But letting go is really hard. A lot of times when I walk away, it's like, bye, oh, I miss you, because I built this relationship with this piece. Like, I do talk to the pieces. At first I thought, you know, nobody's going to see me, so it's okay. But now it's just part of my process. It's like, if a branch doesn't want to come with me, it's like, I'm taking it, and it's like, no, Snaggy is like, okay, that's not ready. Or this, you know, this piece of mud is just going all over the place instead of where I want. It's like, okay, that's not where that mud wants to be. So, you know, just really talking to building that relationship is a wonderful part, I feel, for my process, how I get to feel. But it also builds that difficulty in walking away when we have decided that it's finished and it's on its own process of, you know, returning or changing and back to the forest or the beach. Or, but that walking away is always a little hard for me, and it's always, I think, going to be. So I miss them, as you have a friendship, you know, that you've built, and that you know that you always have that, but it's never going to be in that same way. So it's a great practice for letting go, and for really bringing importance to the time in the presence of being with that, and acknowledging that that is now within my DNA. That is in my breath. That is a memory, but it's not just in my head. You know, it's my hands have built this with nature. My body ached after building it. You know, all those things are part of who I am in molecular form as well as memory. So it's that way of, maybe it's a little, you know, I have been told that maybe my process is a little too self-profound, but that is my process. You know, that it is all that.
It sounds to me like you have a very deep relationship with the earth, and that the work you make is your conversation that you're having with
Absolutely.
You. That's what I'm hearing. And, and my thought is that, and this is what happens when I look at your work, is that, and part of why I wanted season 5 to be about our planet, is that we as a society have come so far away to having any form of relationship with the planet that we are sick on so many levels.
Absolutely.
And it really concerns me. And I've always, on some level, understood that, even as a little girl. I always knew. We lived in flats when I was growing up. We were really, really proper poor. And, you know, there was no greenery. My mum grew plants called Busy Lizzies all around the house. And she it was all the plants she could grow, and she was very good at it. And I just remember, like, craving nature, like craving to go to the park, the beach. And we used to go around, as my, I don't know if you know this, but my parents were Jehovah's Witnesses, and we'd go around door knocking. And I used to love going to places that was a house, not a flat, so that I could stand and look at the garden, because I felt calm. I just felt like around green things. I don't think I understood that conceptually until I was much, much older. And you know, now I have to have a garden. I have to have trees in my garden. I have to be near nature. And as I look at the people, you know, around me that I encounter, you know, but working as a therapist, we're so far removed from the earth. And our earth, the earth and the relationship we have with it, is an expression of the relationship we have with everything.
And, absolutely.
And when you see such disregard for this planet, which is providing life for us, you know, complete, there's no conscious thought put into, you know, if I'm buying this, where does it come from? You know, if I pour this down the sink, what's going to happen? Do I really need that? You know, there's no thought is given. And I'm not pointing fingers, because I'm sure we all do it on some level, not perfectly. And, you know, we've been bred that way. That's what society has done, and we're still buying into it. And it feels like I wanted to say, what else is possible?
And absolutely.
To change something, we have to understand something, which is why, you know, something like land art and being in nature and rebuilding that connection, relationship, the understanding that, you know, how important it is to take care of the planet because she's taking care of us. Rebuild that connection. I wonder what that would do to our connection we have with ourselves and with the people around us that we cohabit and co-create with. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it comes in that, like it does touch on arts as inspiration devices, sort of, you know, that we're moved when we see or we experience something that is, quote, art. And so the inspiration, what is that in spirit, right? The inspiration. So it's that spirit that is moved. And then, you know, our mind is there and that's, but that's the whole in spirit part of it. And then to be in nature, which is so, I think like we are disconnected from nature because it was deemed as dirty and dangerous and wild. And so therefore not safe. And it became, you know, this societal thing that if you were of the land, you were poorer, you were less than, you know, you were like my father-in-law, he's in his 80s. And I came in from the garden one time, we were Zooming, he's not here, he's in Ontario. And I went, hi, and my hands were, you know, dirt, nail, like dirt. And he was like, ah, like he actually viscerally pulled away. And it's that generation that grew up with the idea, especially that generation that grew up with the idea and passed it down to us that nature is to be controlled and separate from us. And what has turned out is that that separation, much like any kind of separation, if we're, you know, in an isolated box, there are so many different detrimental effects to our body and our mind, our mental states, our emotional states. The disconnection is not a singularity. It's, you know, pervasive. So the disconnection with nature is so difficult, I think, because we are nature. It's, if you think about molecules, like nothing ever disappears. You know, it transforms. So as something 1,000 years ago disappeared into, say, this soil, say a tree fell, it is still there in a different form. The molecules of that tree that form that tree are still there. And it might be in you or me. It might be in, you know, the rain that falls, but it's still all there. We are nature. We can't help it. We're, you know, not hermetically sealed from life. We are life, therefore we are nature, and nature is us. So to disconnect is like losing a limb or half your body. It's going to affect how you are in the world in challenging ways. So when we connect again with nature, there's a coming home sense, you know, that sense of if, you know, if you're not in that mind of I'm too afraid, and there are legitimate reasons to be afraid of being in nature in different places. I live where bears and cougars abound, and I'm very aware of salmon season is a different, you know, season than when bears are hibernating, etc. And also, you know, the two-footed type of predators in different places as a woman going out, you know, by myself. So, you know, there's these, you know, things that are safe in a city that we think, but the separation of nature has become analogous to fear for a lot of people. And that idea of returning in your way to nature and connecting. And I find it is a listening deeply process, because we have so many ideas of what nature is, what it isn't, what we are, what we aren't. And if we get rid of that idea in order to connect, it's just listening. It's just deeply being quiet, because there's so much life in nature going on, but we can't hear it deeply without, you know, that intention of listening. And that creates, we would take care of ourselves if we were in need, and nature is in need of our care, because we are careless of nature. Yet nature is us. So, you know, a huge part of why I document, that's my process. That's documentation. That's, you know, and sharing and knowing that it touches people is huge for me, that I can share that idea, and that potential for somebody to think this is important, to connect, that their life is enriched just by bringing down the system to a little bit calmer and maybe a little less afraid to go out and just be with nature and listen. But it's also that idea that it's important for all of us to find that connection, to take care of the world so that we're taking care of us. And it's such a reciprocal relationship. We care for a garden and it gives. We care for an old growth forest and it, you know, it just takes care of so many problems that we've imposed on the earth. If we take care, it is such a reciprocal nurturing relationship, and it's really paramount important. We can do all the right things, but if we don't have a relationship, it can become something of a chore, and it's not. It is life. So that's, it's, I find it very, very important, that disconnect and finding ways to connect with ourselves as nature and nature as ourselves.
How would you recommend to somebody, say, I'm sure there'll be people that are listening to this that are thinking, oh, I don't know what you mean, listening to nature. Mm-hmm. I mean that'll feel really alien to some people. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've got three daughters, and you know, one of them certainly will hug a tree very happily with me.
Yeah.
In fact, I've taught my granddaughter all about trees, and she's only 15.
Wonderful.
Every time we walk past a tree, she'll say tree, and she has to touch it. And she just
beautiful.
Knows. She has the leaves, and there's two trees outside their flat where they live. And when we go in and when we go out, she'll toddle over to the tree and she'll hold it. She just knows instinctively, and she's built a relationship.
Yeah,
the daughters think, you know, they like being in nature; it makes them feel nice. But you know, when they have a tree, they're like, watch me hug a tree, they'll look like, Mom, people are looking.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
let them look. Yeah. But for some people, understandably, you know, they're in their language, and they might be thinking, right. I'd love some of that feel good feeling. How would you recommend people begin that journey if it was new to them?
Yeah, like it is scary for some people when you use words like, you know, even intentional meditation, connection with nature, definitely deep listening. What is that? I'm listening. Like, you know, it becomes too many steps in the way. And they feel scary because somebody might point and laugh at them deeply listening, but it's just being, you know, slowing down. For me, it's connecting in any way. If you're connecting to a person, an animal, I point at my little dog here, getting even more comfortable. But it's about connecting in a way of, slowing down so that constant thought pattern of what we should be doing and what we should be as a person, what we should think. There's so many shoulds in our society, you know, it's a disease of shoulds. And when you slow down, it's easier to let those go because biologically you're telling your body there's no should right now because you're pausing. Mm-hmm. So that intentional pause itself gives you even if it's a tiny bit of space before you go, okay, I have to get back to blah, 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 blah. You've intentionally slowed down. So intentional slowing down and just sitting with, and it can be looking out the window. It can be sitting with a potted plant. It can be in a forest with nobody around. It can be on a park bench. And then just that slowing down, intentional pause, that the deep listening can come later. But it can be just that pause at first. And with that pause, taking a look around with our senses, which is, I'm just going to look at greens today, just greens, and just appreciate greens without ever having to be like, I have to identify the greens. I have to be really better at it. Like, you know, no, just identify textures that notice that you, you know, call your attention. And it can be out the window. It can be with a potted plant. Could be with a rock in your hand and just noticing one sense at a time. And it could last a minute. And then if it feels good, try again, you know, the next day with the same rock or a different place to sit under a tree and just notice another sensory piece of information so that you're beginning to notice and your body's getting used to the importance of that slowing down and the pause of shoulds so that you can connect in a like a peaceful body way that this is part of life. It's not other than this is this tree, this soil, this leaf, this, you know, green, this texture is around me and it's part of life. It's not separate. That's the beginning of, you know, dismantling that separateness. And it's just, it can become more and more a minute to 2 minutes that you might want to sit with a tree for 15 minutes. And after a few minutes of noticing, maybe go through the whole senses. What are my eyes noticing? What are my ears listening to? What are my fingers attracted to? What are, you know, what colors are really popping for me today? And it can be different every day. That there's a point where it's, you notice the birds singing and you notice the more subtle wind in the leaves. You notice all these different sounds and visuals, and eventually, almost without exception, there's a closing of the eyes. And I've worked with clients in this way. It's just like it just happens that the breath gets longer with, you know, some encouragement and some practice, but and the shoulders go down, and so that goes into that sort of deep listening of the thrum of that rhythm of nature, that rhythm of living things from rock and soil to leaf to birds. And it just, there's an other level of acknowledging nature as a thriving, living, evolving force of life. That deep listening isn't necessarily, it can start with the senses, but it's beyond or it's behind that. And it takes a little time. So start with a rock that you've picked up on a beach and you remember, oh, I remember when I picked it up. And it's just all those memories are okay to be with. And you start noticing the weight in your hand. And you just start breathing a little bit slower. And it being okay to it just be 1 minute. But you've connected. And then you build on that just to give yourself, it's not about trying to get more time to do this better. It's about giving yourself permission to have 2 minutes the next day and work with your senses to connect. And just give yourself, the only intention is to give yourself pause, and that connection builds. And you care more. You know, if you've worked with a relationship with a tree for 6 months, when you hear the, you know, chainsaw down the street, you care what's happening there. You know, is this tree being, you know, mangled, or is it dying and going back to the earth in a different way? You begin to care about the other life that's always going on in the background that you are connected to, but now you're aware of that connection.
Thank you. That's a beautiful explanation. And I think that the idea, you know, that you don't, it doesn't have to be flowery. You don't need to have to do something specific or special equipment, but you can begin to develop a relationship with Mother Earth just by taking a moment and observing. And I think it's helpful to remind people, you know, that word intentionality makes such a difference. Like, before you step into that moment of experience, I'm going to sit with that tree, I'm going to hold that. You set the intention, is that you say, you decide you're going to do it. It's not like you're just wandering along and you're like, no, it's a tree. Oh, well, it's very nice. But to set an intention, to say, I'm going to consciously go and just give that my attention for a little while. And it brings your mind into a very different space, which is, you know, you and I clearly both practice mindfulness on some level, in different ways, perhaps. But the difference that makes to your nervous system is so. And I think if people can spend a bit more time in nature or developing some kind of friendship or understanding a relationship with it, that's only going to help them in their other relationships and experiences.
Absolutely. And that's a, even like, well, my husband, he's aware of nature is really good, but you know, to get and all those things, but he still has like, why would I do this? You know, and it's just like, well, and so I speak to him in his language, which is it, and it's true. The research shows that it improves cognitive function. It gives you a better chance of longevity without the long decline. It gives, you know, it, at different ages that means more, and for his age it means a lot right now. So and then there's ability to and the research shows that students who spend a little time in nature with that sort of intention do better on tests. Their anxiety is way down. And there was a research, I think in the UK, where hospital patients were, so after they were in recovery, they had two different groups, and one group had a view of greenery, trees, and out the window. And the other patients had no view of nature. So it was a brick wall or, you know, just no window seeing any kind of greenery. And the results were that the clients or the patients with the view recovered faster with less complications. And once they were discharged and went home, they had better reintegration into their life in a happier ways, rather than, you know, after you go through something that there's a dip of, you know, depression, and that has something to do with the chemical parts of it, but also just who am I with, you know, after this operation and the trauma of the whole thing. But they had better outcomes across the board with just a view of nature. So it's healthy for us. It's for our bodies, our emotions, and also, you know, our cognitive abilities to foster this connection. Like, and that's in a way self-centered. It's better for me, therefore I should, which is fine, you know, whatever gets you there. But there's this bigger thing too, which is we care more for the earth, therefore we'll care more for our neighbors. We'll have heightened compassion and empathy of all kinds of ways of being in this life. You know, there is less otherness to rail against. It is us, all, you know, nature and me and the neighbors and people across the world. So we understand the connectivity, the extreme complex connectivity of every life form, including soil, sun, trees, the neighbors. So it's good for us bodily, it's good for us mentally, it's good for us emotionally, and it's also good for us as a species in a complex system of life.
Exactly. I was thinking also, when you know, in terms of your work, you make a piece, you develop this relationship, and then you know when you step away from it, the likelihood is it's going to decay and back to the earth. And you know, that's a real example of, you know, what happens in our own lives. Like, we're all going to age, we're all going to change. Our relationship that we think might be X in a year or 6 weeks or 10 years, it might look very different. So many things happen around us that we have no control over. And yet our society teaches us that as long as we are X, Y, and Z, we can keep everything the way we think it's good.
Yes.
And we don't allow ourselves to adapt. I am being general here. Lots of people do. We're kind of funneled into, you need to look this way, you need to have this, you need to earn this money, you need to do things a certain way. But actually, that's a really unrealistic expectation for anybody, and very, it feels really limiting to me. It feels, for me, it's all strangled. I've never been able to kind of fit into any kind of box. So I don't But your work really speaks to that. And I think that's a big part of what attracts me to it, is that it's not always going to be there. And it's going to look different every time I see it, not just because of my view, but because it is different, it's changing. And that's the reality of life. Is that an intentional part of what's happening when you do the work? and then share it with people to help them kind of look at that? Or is that not something you think?
No, absolutely. That's a huge part. It's it started out with a practice for me to like just I've had that, like you, I didn't fit in any, I don't remember a time where that box was easy fit, right, at all. But you know, and that rigid idea of having to and should is part of it, works for, you know, the capitalism and that consumerism and everybody in its place, then you can invest and you can make, you know, money off of this, and you can, you know, that's predictable. It's predictable for markets, but humans aren't that, you know? And so that, like you say, that stranglehold, even people who fit in it suffer. So it is a suffering box, that rigidity. But part of my work, so I've always been aware that I don't fit in to that box, and that's not always been a power. Sometimes it's been, you know, if you could just whatever, you know, stop speaking or stop doing or stop, you know, looking, whatever, that's been part of my life. And anyone who is, you know, not fit in the box and been aware of it understands that. But it's the practice was to really embrace that. I had this driving need to produce something, you know, coming out of burnout and anxiety and really some darker times for me. It was driven to just get better, to just fix this, to create something and then make this in society. And that is so antithetical to me, but that's where I was, because that's what I figured, you know, that's the part of burnout, right? Is that we think that the solution is to go more rigid and more hard to get forward. And, you know, that's where I was. But so it was a very intentional to me to create things that didn't have to be anything, and they didn't have to be here forever. And the more time I spent creating with nature, I understood that that was the journey of nature, that everything, nothing goes away, but nothing ever stays the same. So that, you know, that mirroring of what I was going through with that, I could see that is natural. That is sense of peace, that I'm not trying to hang on to something. So trying to hang on, like, you know, we have the claws of hands trying to hang on to something. And that is like, you know, we get muscle fatigue. our chest starts hurting. And it's, if you let go, what does that feel like? If you're letting go, sometimes it's free falling and scary, but you're not hanging on. You're not, you know, exerting that strain. So the letting go is really important. And one of the for documentation, it was always underscored that that is what I'm working with. And it was commented on right away is, why don't you, you know, preserve these? Why don't you, you know, do, it's like, well, I'm preserving it in a way of the documentation, but I'm allowing and not imposing within that relationship with nature that this is a co-creation. So who am I to say I'm going to coat it in plastic and put a, you know, dome over it so nothing touches it? It is part of the work. It is not, when I leave and I'm like saying goodbye to a piece and it's ended, it's done. It's not, it's done for me. It's not done. It's that my part in it is to, I could come back and visit. I can, you know, document its decay, which I do sometimes, but I'm not hands-on. And that's really hard not to go, oh, I'll just put that little stick back. And I do once in a while, but as it decays, I honor the process is continuing. It's not me, but one of the big projects that, and I started with in a new forest, and it was the year long project. And the very first one I was working, and I was in a forest where there are trails around, but it's on a friend's property, but it backs onto like a public park, but not a lot of people came around. And somebody who lived in the next property had been coming by. And I did not know this until one day I slept in the forest for that one. It was nice June, and I just put my hammock up, spend the night. Of course, I look like I spent the night in the forest, you know, just twigs and, you know, just, yeah, not, this was near the end of the second day when I was going to be leaving. And I heard people, and I never hear people. And so I found my way. It's like, and I was going, it's like, oh, those kids, you know, they're going to destroy my, you know, that was my mindset that somebody was going to do something. And so I went in kind of with that attitude of being very tired and assuming the worst. And I peeked through the trees and they were at my big, like it's about, I think it was about 7 feet circle between two trees, this big orb or circular piece. And there were six people standing around with wine glasses. Wow. Discussing what it is, who could have built it, how. And so I was listening to this, and then their dog came at me, and I'm like, oh no, what is going on? This surreal moment of attack, and they're looking at my stuff, and who are they? And they came, and they were so lovely. But the woman that I met, Sarah, was like, well, I've been bringing people up here for weeks and showing them this thing that has developed in my forest. And it turned out it was on her. It was just at the board. It was on her land. But I'm like, oh, okay. And then she talked about like that she had been bringing up people and about what is it, what could it be. And so I filled them in on a few things, and she goes, can I come up and take a look at as you're working? And I'm like, sure. And she goes, what are you going to do with it? Which is, you know, that's that permanency, right? And I said, oh, it's just about finished once I get done, you know, about another week, and then I leave it. And she's like, what do you mean? That's, you know, and I just had to, you know, assert that part of that process is as nature has agreed to come together and play with me, I also agree that it can go without my interference into its way of transforming. And it's not disintegration or even decline. It's like, it's another process. So, and she went, could I come and fix it? Could I come and keep it up? And I'm like,
no.
Well, you know, can't stop you. And, and I said, you can, because I thought, okay, this is us actually part of the process, this encounter, this weird encounter in the forest, you know, with people with wine glasses and me with twigs in my hair is a weird, but, you know, that's life. These weird things happen, and that she wanted to preserve it. But at the same time, I knew how precarious everything is. Like, I don't use wires and, I don't use adhesive. I use the tension of the trees, and, you know, the most I use is sort of twine, sometimes like cotton or jute twine that is going to disintegrate. Sometimes some paper too, again, disintegrating with no adhesives. But it's, I knew that it was so precariously that if she tried to fix it, it would probably fall. Like if you integrate, like it's really about listening and really feeling how the next branch goes on, because it will fall. Mm-hmm. At a moment's notice, you know, that it's just, if it's already falling and she tried to push it back, it would be. So anyway, she decided that she was going to do upkeep. And through the summer, she kept on bringing people back, and I'd meet her. And then I was doing another one not far off, and she came one day. And then at one point in the fall, the big one was falling down a bit, and I was at another spot, and I could overhear her telling the person, it's like, well, disintegration is part of the process. And, you know, and so telling him, and I was like, great. Yeah. You know, it's just like, she understood when she had that permission to, you know, do what she had to do in a way. But yeah. And that she did a really good walk around with people about three or four of my pieces. So it was like, she didn't know I was there, and I didn't feel like she was doing so well. You know, and we became friends, and like that I'd seek her out, and she'd once in a while come out and talk to me about the work and stuff. But it was an interesting, you know, evolution of how she understood what the work was, from magic in the forest that just this thing popped up, to here's the artist's process, and part of her process is to let it go, and you know, just noticing the beauty in the changes, the transformations. So, you know, it does affect people in different ways, and that's what that documentation that I do is, you know, or in person, is that a lot of people have a difficulty with me letting it go, and that's okay, because they're encountering, anytime you get that sort of burr in your saddle, you know, it's like, oh, something, then, you know, it gets in there and ruminates about how can she let it go, but maybe there's something in there, you know. So I think I didn't force Sarah to get there, but you know, lots of different reasons maybe why she got there, but the point was that there is beauty in the letting go. It's not the end, it's a transformation. And that's really important to my practice, for myself, but also for people. Because as you say, it's part of life, you know, to not hang on.
If you look back through, you know, the fairy tales and in history, and, you know, there's such a story around, you know, as soon as something's no longer youthful and shiny and perfect,
yes,
it becomes bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's that demarcation, right? Of good and bad. Again, that rigidity of, and it's the, you know, the roots of consumerism. Get a new, get a new, get a new. And we're inundated with that constantly for generations now. So, but like you say, even in the fairy tales, the old hag, the old house, the, like, you know, and it's always dark villain, or, you know, somehow backward. And it's been a long time since we've decided that that's bad and new and shiny is good. So it's going to take a bit.
Yeah, it will. It will. If you were going to make a piece of art, do you have to ask permission before you go into a piece of land and do the work? So if people are listening, I'm feeling very inspired to go to my local woods and make something.
Good.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to send you a picture. You know,
lovely.
I haven't been to the woods very much because I had a ruptured Achilles last year. So I'm on a regular wood walk. I can barely walk around the block at the minute. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'm very anxious to go anywhere where the ground's not perfectly.
Yes. Soft. Yes. Yeah.
I'm just kind of making my way back. And yeah, I'm going to go back and I don't know. I'm going to see what happens when I go there. I have a particular tree that I meditate with. And what's really interesting is I'm a practicing cranial sacral therapist, so I listen to cranial rhythm, and trees have a rhythm. So
absolutely,
each tree goes to a different depth and has a different expression. Mm-hmm. And if you hold different parts of the tree, you'll feel the rhythm. Well, you'll know this, but you'll feel the rhythm in different places. And you know, you can tell when a tree is dormant or it's dying or it's ill, or, you know, when it's growing or whatever, and they talk to you, and it's I have a full-on conversation with my tree, various trees.
That's great. Yes, there's more and more of us.
Yeah, there are. So I'm going to do that. But if we were to do that, you know, can we just go to a piece of land, or is it something you have to ask permission for first?
So if it, I work with like longer projects where I'm going in for days on it, like I usually work on private land that I've asked permission for, the big projects where it's ongoing. I have been asked to people's land to do that. And then I've also asked people when I go for a walk, what I do when I, it's like a, when I'm making a piece that is, you know, maybe a couple hours from beginning to end, and I walk out. I always am aware that it depends on what kind of park. If it's a conservation area, no, you know, just this don't bring anything in, don't bring anything out. But if it's like a trail, there's already impact. And if it's something, and the way I work is completely only natural materials, especially when it's something like when I go for a hike or a walk in a trail, I, you know, be considerate of something that you would have to get permission if you were going to interfere with the movement of the path or the animals. If it's going to stay longer than a day or a few days, you know, just, and I work with what's there. I'm thinking of one where it was down by the water, and there was a branch that was really coming down almost to the ground. And there was so much almost there. And then just picking up, you know, some grasses and weaving a basket and adding some moss. And so it, even though it changed visually a lot, it didn't change what was there, you know? So it's something that a couple of hours and then it will transform without any kind of interference. I don't worry about getting the permissions from the parks and that, where it's invited to interact with your environment. When there's like areas that are cordoned off, or I'm thinking about one where it's like they're trying to conserve that kind of really fragile ecosystem, I don't make stuff there because that invites people sort of to do the same. You know, and this is a really, you know, so you have to be respectful of our systems in place, parks and land and what that's like. But at the same time, if you could sit under a tree and not disturb anything for, say, half an hour or an hour, if you could build a little stone stack or something that would not be intrusive to anything or a danger to any, that's the areas that I find it's not a problem to work with. But I mean, I know our provinces are different and different countries are different, but usually as long as there's, what is that? There's a leave no trace in certain areas, but the trace is already there as an invitation in different parks with the pathways and the benches and, you know, different things like that. I go to one park, or it's not even a park, it's just a trail where horses ride and bikes ride down the trail. And the forest has been, it was cleared maybe 50 years ago, and it's kind of scrubby and stuff, but they don't clear it, clean it, take care of that area. But that's a nice place to just go and just off the track and make a little thing, because nobody's going there. There's already an impact. I don't ever leave garbage ever. I don't interfere with like deer crossings, stuff like that. So, you know, just being mindful of how that space is being used will give you an indication of, should I do something here? And the other thing is, if you're not sure, you know, you can pick up rocks. I mean, not everywhere, but mostly, you know, just a stick that, you know, or things that are already on the ground. I don't tend to, you know, cut. Once in a while, I will cut a tree that's dead or in the way, or a branch that is, you know, ready to go. I'll trim, I guess, I'll ask the trees, can I give you a little haircut? Just a little trim to, you know, thin things out here. You'll feel so much lighter and better. It's like, you know, it's like, okay, some say no, and I move on. So it's, you know, use your discretion and awareness that it's not just you in the world, and there is a deep need to be respectful of nature itself, as in what it wants to do, what it wants to co-create with you, but also the deer and the birds and et cetera, but also people in the use of that. And if it's a problem, I do like to create quite remotely, but I have worked in little places that I know people will come by, but I really try to make sure that nothing will fall on anyone. Nothing will strangle anything. You know, all those, I do consider that all the time. And my daughter has a mobility disability. She uses cuff crutches. She has very reduced coordination and balance. So with her going through her world, I'm always aware of how things can be tricky, or how somebody could be hurt, or how something is accessible is for one person is not accessible for another. And I'm aware of that. It's not always, all the places I work aren't always accessible, but I'm aware that accessibility looks different in different ways. So that's part of my work as well. So it's a big consideration, especially when I'm feeling out a space to work in. And it can be just a little, you know, leaf boat going down the river. But if it's, you know, some kind of impactful, I do have to consider. I wanted to do a leaf sort of a whole line of leaves across the river where I was, but it was, there were fishermen and the salmon were spawning, and I'd have to go. It's like, well, I'm not going to do that. Not so much for the fishermen, but the spawning salmon, I was not going to disturb that. It's like, chalk that up for another day. That's not going to happen today, even though I really wanted to. Mm-hmm. The impact I always am considering, including the human impact. So the permissions, think about how the place is used, how the place is integrated with humans. And if it's private, of course, always ask. But when I don't have space or the bandwidth to figure it out, I go into my backyard. I go into my front yard. I have a ton of stuff that I've mm-hmm. brought back with, you know, invitation. I've asked the piece of wood. It's like, would you like to come home with me? You know, and those things. So I do like indoor stuff, sculptures as well, with pieces that have come home with me, which I don't have to worry too much about permissions of what's going to be there and how it impacts.
Yeah. You just a final one or two final thoughts. So just thinking, you know, you spoke a little bit about catalysm. I imagine we're on a very similar page. You know, we have to earn a living. That's how it goes. And I think art for me feels like it's so hard to place a value on it. And I don't know that we should. It almost feels like it should be outside of money to me.
It does, yeah.
And yet at the same time, because the minute you put a value on something, you feel like you've got to meet a certain criteria, or you've got to maintain that, or it changes your view, because like, well, if I'm going to make that piece of work and people are going to be spending this much money on it, you know, there's pressure, isn't there? And it does feel like outside of money to me. I mean, that might be complete nonsense. I have no idea. But you, at the same time, you still have to make a living. So how do you manage that kind of balance of, I've got to live in the world, but, you know, this is art?
Yeah. It's sort of, well, multifaceted, like many things. For me, because I do feel that as well, that and I do go through, I'm very susceptible to, what's my worth, you know, that go. So I'm really aware of that now, to not get caught up into that, even though it comes in, you know, just noticing and putting it as, you know, a little bit separate from my self worth. But there's different ways of finding things that resonate with you. I'm writing a book with my experiences, and it's more of a guidebook and journal for people who want to go into nature and connect with through the creative process. Because I've been asked so many times, and I'm like, I like sharing that with people. So that's something that, even though it's a lot of work, I find it part of my expression. Whereas if I had to do something else, it may not be. The other parts are, I do sell photographs of the pieces because they're gone and nobody will see them. So I do have these documentations and sculptures that can be for exhibitions and for sale. So those things are, but they're not to be sold. They exist and then they may want to go to be sold. So it is with that kind of ideology in land art, intrinsically, there's that, you know, not against, but there's an awareness of gallery, museum kind of hierarchy of who gets in and who. Curation is problematic with a lot of, you know, with how I work. But it's, so in that I balance, part of my life is that I live very sustainably. You know, that works with my ethos of being connected to nature, but I make a lot of my own food. I'm vegan. I work with thrifting rather than, you know, buying new clothes. I, you know, all these different things allow me to have less outgoing needs. And so I need less income to do that. That I know is a privilege. And I totally understand that. And it's something that I've worked and I put a lot of time and effort into, because that's important to, you know, be able to create and not have that production level, you know, time. I've also, in Canada, we have a Canadian Council of the Arts. So, you know, applying, there's some grants that are available for artists. It's application process, which is like, you know, that thing again, but and there's different artistic councils and grants and different things like that that you can work with. And I, you know, I've done a few, and I'm planning now a few exhibitions where they're in sort of different spaces, you know, and how that is. But it's, for me, it's really important that part of that hierarchy of production art is that it eliminates so many people from being able to own art or to have an affinity. Like my dad was that, like, it just like, what do you need that for? That's no, you know, what's the practical use? Like, you know, just the idea of, you've got this much money, why are you going to put it on something that looks pretty? Doesn't make sense for a lot of people. And also as an artist, you're saying no to a lot of people that can't afford what you need to make a living. So it's, you know, it's very mixed. How I've done it is to find my footprint as small as possible and to find ways that I can have less outgoing, so I don't need as much income to continue to create. But I'm still embroiled in making the, you know, the book and finding the sculptural pieces that, you know, and the council grants and stuff like that. So, you know, it's a balance, but that's the core part of my ethos, is to have less need, therefore less need to really buy into that part.
And we have to live in this system, even if we disagree with it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And that's that balance of finding what you're comfortable with, what you could be comfortable with, and what you're not comfortable with. So, you know, and that comfort is like maybe a good entry word, but it gets deeper real quick when you go, well, what can I do? Do I want to make food from scratch every day? No. And then till you try it, you know, and then go, okay, well, I like this better. And, you know, then there's many faceted parts of nothing is, again, singular. Everything is connected. So when you choose this, this is affected and this is affected. So, you know, it's a net of choices that affect my outgoing and incoming needs.
Yeah, which I think is incredibly commendable. And I think it's very, very challenging, because I think a vast number of people in this world have been brought up to be very unconscious about, you know, their impact on the world. And I don't blame them. You know, I'm not pointing the finger. Mm-hmm. You're not exposed.
Well, we've been there. If we're here now, we've been in some way there, right? So, yeah.
100% for sure. I just want to share, just before we finish, a little quote from your website, because I really like it. So this is on carolwallacearchstudio.com, but it'll be in the notes. And she said, okay, the common thread that runs through all of my art is the sense of connection. I connect to and through the process of creating itself, and also with the media and materials, the story that emerges from within and unfolds throughout the making process. The space where I work and the unknowns called possibilities. Listening and staying open for connections to appear in the most unexpected ways in my practice. I hope you enjoy my work. I hope you find something of interest to ponder. I hope you feel inspired. And then if you have any questions, I'm here. It was just so beautiful. And one of the things I really thought about when I kind of was reading your stuff is you're very thoughtful. And you know, I guess that's maybe a word that I'll take forward into this season, is that maybe if we all became a bit more thoughtful about lots of things, our connection to each other and the planet and the impact we have on each other and the planet might change. So maybe thought Import less. I don't know. What do you think?
I think that's I'm touched. Thank you. It's interesting to be reflected back when I'm just a lot of times just talking like myself. I'm in the forest in my mind a lot by myself. But yeah, the thoughtful and thoughtless are, when you say those two together, it makes sense. Be thoughtful. And you know, most people who are thoughtful have been accused of daydreaming and in your head too much growing, you know, in schools and those things. But it is, I have this big world inside, but you know, it's different than being stuck in your thoughts. To be thoughtful of, you know, is just a, like, it's a gentleness of going inward and connecting outward. And I wish there was kind of another word that didn't have thought in it, because we get this thinking, this, you know, intelligence, this, you know, thinking mind, monkey mind mentality of having lots of thoughts. But it's, to be thoughtful doesn't mean you have a lot of thoughts. It's just this relationship with wonder. And that's different than having a lot of thoughts. So, but being thoughtless, a lot of people have thoughts when they're thoughtless, but they're not thinking of that deeper connection. So it's funny that these two words are so incredibly pertinent, and yet people can take them as, you know, not important, because thoughtless people have lots of thinking. And it's like, you know, I'm thoughtless sometimes, where you're going through the day and it's like, oh, I didn't stop once to figure out what I was doing or who I affected, and you know, just these different thoughtless moments. But it's different than being, yeah, pondering, full of wonder, being open to thoughts and being thoughtful in that manner is, I think, really important to connect to our true selves and our true connection of the world and nature. And I think out of that comes the potential for healing. Out of that comes the need to be respectfully inclusive, because it's all one. So the more we are thoughtful, that will wave, you know, the waves or ripples do come out to include that healing and connection with others.
Yeah, gosh, that's profound. My goodness, thank you so much for this conversation. It's been everything I'd hoped for. And
Oh, good, good.
I'm really hoping that when your book is done, you will come back and talk to us again
I'd love to.
and share your book. And maybe, I don't know, maybe we could kind of tag it along with a little program we could do. I don't know, maybe
Absolutely.
project that we could do as the podcast and, you know, maybe, I don't know, 7 days of art or a month of art or something wonderful.
Absolutely.
It would be really interesting. We could kind of Instagram and stuff, but I imagine lots of people listening to this are sitting there thinking, I really want to reconnect with my creative self, and that might look like anything in nature, or, you know, paper or moving or whatever. Doesn't have to be, you know, making something specific, does it?
No, it just has, I mean, moving
Yeah.
is creating, right? A dance of your own. Just humming is music. Like, there's just so many ways. Drawing a picture in the sand, you know, it's just, once we take the sort of measurement of good or bad out of it, you're free. You're free to be creative. You are a creative soul.
And the other thing that really came to me, just as you were saying that, was like, you said the measurement to be creative, and also the measurement of value. Like, it doesn't have to have a value that is measurable by somebody else. Just the art of
Yes.
making it, and, you know, just the joy of doing that, it's intrinsically enough. Yes.
Yes, it is. It feeds you as much as, you know, it nourishes your soul as much as we feed, you know, with food. But it's so, and like you said, we do have to live in this world, but there is so many ways to integrate that, and that it is so compounding of good things and of health and vibrancy in your life when you can do that. So it's not just doing that creative thing for joy and experiencing that joy, but it does compound so many things in your life and connections to the world.
Wonderful. Oh, thank you so much for taking the time. out of your day to share, you know, your life and your work with us. I'm deeply, deeply touched and grateful that you were kind enough to come along. And I'm really excited to share this podcast with everybody. So thank you so
Oh,
much.
thank you. I'm honored. I think what you're doing is amazing. And it was such an easy way to maybe, you know, I talk a lot, but I really appreciate you holding that space and being so open and gracious. And I really commend you.
Oh, thank you. That's so kind. Thank you. I do love a chat.
Good.
It's
I'm such an introvert, like raging introvert, but it's like, whoa, get me on subject. And it's
I can totally relate. Okay, so thank you guys, thank you for listening. To my listeners, thank you for coming back to season 5, or new listeners for joining in. Please do me the kindness and favor of leaving a review, following the show, and sharing with your friends, because that's how we grow. This podcast is done just for the love and nothing else. There are no adverts for a good reason. I just do it because, you know, let's share some deep, wonderful, rich, joyful conversations and make our community stronger. So if you can do that, I would be very grateful. And go create. And why not, you know, when you go and create, share it on Instagram if you have that, with Angela. And she'd be delighted to see what work you've done after listening to her conversation. So this is from the heart, and have a lovely day.